Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Frozen mountains, glacier ice, and musk ox burgers. Welcome to Northern Canada. Hi, friends. We're on day three of our travel article for this month. It's June 8th, and we're continuing with a nature cruise through northern Canada. I'm Naomi, and back with me in this studio, we have Lois, Bill, and Simon. Welcome back, everyone.
Oh, great to be back.
Great to be here.
So what has been most appealing to you about this travel destination so far, Lois?
You know, I think there's two things I really like. I think I would like to see all the variety of birds. And I would really like a chance to get to see some icebergs really floating by.
Okay. We had some really descriptive words used to explain what these icebergs look like yesterday.
That's right.
They almost sound like moving works of art.
I think so. And, you know, you don't very often get to see it. If you're on a ship, a cruise ship, you might get to see it. And I just think it would be a real highlight to any travels.
Okay. Bill, how about you?
Well, I really like the idea of seeing the nature, the animals up there. You know, the birds, I had mentioned going up to Alaska, and the birds I saw in Alaska were very different from anything I had seen, whether it was in the continental United States or parts of Asia. They have their own unique, you know, species up there. So, I never was even a bird watcher, but I was fascinated by what I saw.
Are you a birder now?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe I am a birder. Yeah, I'm into birds now. I'm fascinated by them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Simon, how about you?
Well, I will have to be the first to admit that it sounds like life is not always easy in northern Canada, but it really does sound like a fantastic adventure. We've had lots of descriptions over the last couple of days, and to be honest, things just sound kind of like they're so different they might not even be from this planet. Yeah, and I would really like to see that.
It's true that in most parts of the world now, it seems like there's a bit of a meeting of cultures where the world has become kind of a global village. And whether you're in Shanghai or San Francisco, a lot of the restaurants are going to be the same. A lot of your experiences are going to be quite similar. There are fewer places in the world that are really this different from most of civilization.
Yeah, you're really getting away from everything. And we're talking about communities. These are not cities. They are really not even towns. These are villages or communities where 100, 150 people was actually a big gathering. And what comes with that is the unique personality that the communities take on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and I think, you know, the villagers, they learn to live within their means, within the nature surrounding them, and that helps them interact with the visitors much differently.
Okay. We heard that some of these villagers do welcome tourists. They like to show off, you know, this is how we do it here. This is how our way of life is different from yours.
Exactly. I know my husband and I went to a village where First Nations people were in Canada, and I still have something I treasure so much. I bought a little pair of baby moccasins.
Oh.
And both my kids, when they were tiny little babies, wore them, and now they decorate a shelf.
Oh.
And they just have such great memories, and it's just nice to have something that was handmade in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are moccasins?
Oh, yes. Moccasins are like a slipper almost, and they're made with animal hide, and oftentimes the hide of an animal that is well-known in that area. In this case, we might find out a little later, might be a musk ox, might be a bison, might be something like that, caribou, whatever.
Yes, we did mention musk ox briefly already, and we see a picture of them there on page 19. We'll come back to them in a moment. Now, yesterday, we left off with what I thought seemed like a really spectacular highlight of the trip.
Right. We were talking about seeing glaciers and icebergs. And in fact, the writer was talking about walking around the tongue of a glacier and also having a couple of the local staff actually sing this song into a cave that echoed their song in a glacier.
Right, a special kind of singing called throat singing, and I'm sure all of you did look that up, and so now you have an idea of what that sounded like. To me, that sounded like it must just have been the moment of the trip. But as we start our reading today, we discover that for our author, it was something else. Let's continue on page 18.
Ilulissat. But the highlight of the trip was the town of Ilulissat. Ilulissat's crowning glory is the Jacobshavn Glacier, the world's fastest and most active glacier. It creeps at a rate of 4.5 miles every year, both toward the ocean and back again, and 18 to 20 tons of ice calve off it daily. Though fishing, especially shrimp, is the town's main occupation, there's a boardwalk that goes from the edge of town through the tundra right up to that huge mass of ice. The boardwalk alone is beautiful, lined with fluffy Arctic cotton and endless crowberries, which in August are ripe for the picking. At the end, you can take trails up low rocks to an incredible overlook, sloping frozen mountains that heave slowly back and forth with unseen currents. I decided to head for Ilulissat's famous musk ox burger. The meat was tender, with a hint of game that gently hits the roof of your mouth and, like one of our Inuit friends said, speaks of the land.
So for the author of A Nature Cruise Through Northern Canada, the highlight of this cruise was what, Bill?
It was a trip to the town of Ilulissat. And she says Ilulissat is, what their crowning glory there is, a glacier.
Now, when we talk about something's crowning glory,
that means the highlight, the thing you want to see. It's the most special part of a place or something special.
Yeah, something that really this place is well known for, maybe. They kind of, it shows it at its best. It's most, the best thing it has to offer people. Its most exciting feature.
Mm-hmm.
And
That's
in
right.
this case, it is a glacier. The Jacobshavn Glacier, and it's the world's fastest and most active glacier.
That's right. So it's not just any glacier. This is a fast glacier. Usually when we think about glaciers, we don't think about them moving too quickly, not really like volcanoes or something like that. But apparently this one moves 4.5 miles each year.
Okay, so that's faster than your usual glacier.
Yeah.
Run.
It is.
Run
it
the glacier.
It does still say it creeps. But, you know, to me, glacier going 4.5 miles every year, I'm just thinking about that when you're driving or doing a little bit of a run. Okay, that's quite significant.
I guess it's fast for a glacier.
Well, yeah, normally glaciers move much slower. I actually did a little bit of math on this, Naomi, and that comes out to about 60 or 70 feet per day. And you're looking at about around just a little bit under 3 feet per hour. So I think you can actually see this thing moving, which we normally might not be able to see with a glacier.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So it sounds slow, but this is remarkable considering what it is.
Well, especially if you can see it. Boy, that would be interesting.
Not only see it, but you certainly would hear it as it would be like kind of grinding away as it did move. But then there's even more as far as that you would hear it later.
Right. There's something else that you should be able to hear quite clearly with this glacier.
That's right. They describe 18 to 20 tons of this ice calving off, which means sort of breaking off from the glacier into icebergs every day.
Mm-hmm.
So these giant chunks of ice are just kind of cracking off the glacier and falling into the water to be icebergs.
It must be amazing to see. Continuing on the next page, page 19, what do you do in this town, Lois?
Well, we do something that a lot of people in Asia like doing. Though fishing, especially shrimp, is a town's main occupation, there's a boardwalk that goes from the edge of town through the tundra right up to the huge mass of ice.
Okay. So fishing is a big deal here. This is what people do.
Right.
If you're around, you're fishing.
And I was going to say, some people here will get the wonderful fish called Arctic char. And if you've ever had it, it's a real treat, and I would recommend it.
Okay, but there's something else you can do for fun that Lois just read.
Yeah, certainly. This is for, for visitors mostly. Locals can do it too. But they want to walk along a boardwalk, which is going to be an elevated wooden platform that lifts you up above maybe some land that's not smooth or easy to walk on. And so you walk along the tundra.
Okay.
Yeah.
So first of all, this terrain, Bill, you mentioned a couple days ago, it's quite rugged in the north, and it could also be icy, slippery, full of puddles if the weather's warming up a little bit. So that boardwalk, I would be grateful for that. But when we talk about the tundra, Simon, I remember learning about this in geography class when I was in school. Did you learn about it too?
This is one of those words that most people are familiar with, but they don't necessarily know what it means. And as I understand it, it just describes a kind of landscape where things are sort of always frozen. We actually use the word permafrost, which means permanently frozen. And that, of course, is why they have this wooden walkway, because if they were to build a sidewalk, it would sort of crack and break with this frozen landscape.
Right. When we were before we started recording, we talked about traveling above the tree line. And what does that mean?
Well, it means that in this part of the world, Naomi, there will not be any trees.
Right.
And when they say there's no trees, there is no trees. It's quite interesting.
Right. They can't grow.
Right. And so the tree line actually, it refers to what is actually a line across northern Canada. And south of the line, there are trees. North of the line, there are no trees.
Right. Those roots just can't penetrate the frozen ground. And so this is what we're walking along and looking at. And we can see some pictures actually just right there to the right of the article. We see that this terrain, it looks quite different, kind of empty, but I think beautiful in its own way too.
Yeah, we had the word desolate earlier in our article, Naomi. That is one of our vocab focus terms. That would describe it. So the land is desolate, but the boardwalk alone is beautiful. And what that means, just the work of craftsmanship and the carpentry that they put into this is beautiful. It's really quite a thing to walk along.
And it sounds like there's a lot of beautiful things to notice as you're walking on the boardwalk.
Yes, you can see that fluffy Arctic cotton and endless crowberries, which in August are ripe for the picking. So I gather we can eat them. That sounds good to me.
Okay, a little treat along the way.
Right, that word fluffy is interesting. When I hear the word fluffy, I usually think of soft-looking clouds.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose that's what this cotton looks like.
And with the berries, I could see it being very beautiful. There also tend to be some nice flowers growing in tundra areas. It's a different kind of scenery from what you're used to. And so that's always interesting.
Yes, and actually what is interesting then is once we get to the end of this boardwalk, then we can take trails up to some low rocks that have an incredible overlook here than to see all of the tundra and the glaciers and the ice.
Mm-hmm. So it sort of lets you climb up to this sort of elevated area, and from there you can look out to all the ice, all those glaciers and icebergs. And again, we describe them in, a really beautiful way, Simon.
Well, you describe them as sloping frozen mountains. So obviously they're frozen. We've been talking about permafrost and how cold everything
Everything's
is.
Frozen.
but the interesting thing here is that they say they heave, which means sort of move very slowly and kind of heavily. So they move, they heave slowly back and forth with unseen currents.
Almost like elephants.
Yeah.
Yeah, heaving back and forth.
And that word currents, of course, usually reminds us of the way water moves. And so it's kind of like they're flowing back and forth with the tide or something.
Mm-hmm. So imagine moving mountains, you're watching and they're just sort of swaying back and forth. It sounds incredible to me.
Yeah, that would be that slow movement, unseen current, so we can't see exactly why they're moving. So after this, though, the writer then heads out for a bite to eat.
Yes, and here's where those musk oxen show up again. Have you ever tried musk ox?
I haven't had a musk ox burger. I've had a bison burger. I would imagine they're quite similar.
Can you explain about a bison burger?
Well, you know, to me, it wasn't that gamey or wild tasting as I thought it would be. It actually tasted quite a bit like beef.
What's a bison?
A bison is like what we think of as a buffalo. They look like they're from the same family as this musk ox here in this picture on page 19.
Very big and shaggy and strong.
Exactly.
Creatures.
And it's probably like also a bison burger is they're healthier for you than beef.
Ooh, interesting. Okay, so this is quite an experience to order musk ox burgers in the far, far north. And how does our author describe the taste?
The meat was tender with a hint of game. And then she says, gently hits the roof of your mouth. And I'm going to stop right there for a moment. We see here this thing, hint of game, that makes it seem like a little wilder than what you're normally used to. And actually, it's going to be maybe a little bit more flavorful because of that.
Right. The gamiest meat I've ever tried was flying squirrel. And so if anyone who's listening has tried that, then you know it has a very different taste from something like chicken or, you know, a burger. I mean, it's just a different flavor.
Yeah, it's very distinct. So, and then this very distinct taste gently hits the roof of your mouth. And like one of our Inuit friends said, speaks of the land.
That sounds like a phrase Simon would use.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what it means, but it sounds pretty good. I'm guessing here that speaks of the land sort of means it reminds you of how wild things are up in northern Canada. Because, of course, that word game refers to wild animals, right?
It's there. I think this is just a saying to remind you of our reliance upon nature.
Okay.
That's what the speaker is getting at.
All right.
I was thinking the land calls out to you. It just really seems like that when you say speaks of the land. Maybe
Eat
the land's
me.
Calling out to you.
Okay, well, while you are all enjoying your musk ox burgers, we'll continue on to Disco Bay.
Disco Bay. We wound up the day with a Zodiac tour of Disco Bay's icebergs, threading our way through a white soup of bits, big and small. Dave, our boat driver and guide to all things frozen, grabbed a chunk of clear glacier ice for drinks, holding it up so his face was fractured by its crystal facets. And then we heard a loud crack, followed by a rumble, followed by a huge splash. The entire side of a house-sized iceberg had collapsed, disintegrating as it fell into the water in a gray cloud of ice crystals that looked like smoke. The largest chunk rolled, leaving its smooth, translucent green underside sparkling in the sun. That night, we toasted the berg, the burger, and our entire trip with glacier cocktails of crystalline chunks that had once fallen as snow.
So if you wind up something, it can mean a big variety of things, actually. But in this case, what do we mean, Lois?
Well, it says they're finishing up their day. They're getting everything completed. They can call it a day, and they can run in and go have their musk ox burger.
Okay.
And something really hot to drink.
Right. What's this last activity for them?
Well, they're taking a Zodiac tour, and a Zodiac might not be a word that's familiar to everybody. Sometimes we think of it as something that kind of people use and read in the newspaper, but this actually refers to a kind of boat, and so they're taking a tour in a little boat.
We've talked about these in advance before on a couple of other Arctic adventures. It's a type of inflatable boat, and so they could take a tour of Disco Bay. It sounds like a party, doesn't it, Bill?
Yeah, it is. It sounds like a party, but it's something different, Disco being a proper name in this case. And what they're doing is they're going to see the icebergs in Disco Bay. And we read about them weaving their way before. Now they're threading their way through this white soup of bits, being the ice big and small pieces.
Yeah, I love the idea of a white soup. You know, it's a fun way to describe it because I can almost picture like the soup I had at lunch today had, you know, carrots and tomatoes kind of poking out over the surface of the soup. And so you can picture this part of the bay the same way. It's a lake, but then there's little bits sticking out that you have to kind of go around.
Now, keep in mind, this Zodiac boat, normally it's a smaller boat. It's inflatable. It might be circular shape, and it might be suited for 8 or 10 people. So this is not a big vehicle. It's a small raft that they're going through. So it makes you feel very vulnerable.
Because it is open air. But at the same time, it's not like you're in danger being on these boats, right?
That's right. These Zodiac boats, they're very durable boats. They move very quickly. You see them actually quite frequently on the news when you see sort of people in the Navy or something moving very quickly through the ocean in a little boat.
Right. But despite that, they are open air. I mean, there isn't anything between you and nature at this point. You know, you're out there, and we see that in our next sentence. We meet Dave.
Right. It says, Dave, our boat driver and guide to all things frozen. I love that. So he knows about everything that's frozen. He knows about this type of land. He is very well informed.
Right. And so what does Dave do?
Well, he grabs a chunk of clear glacier ice for drinks, and he holds it up to his face. We actually can see a picture of this on page 16, right under our title there. You can see a piece of that ice being held up. It's amazing how clear that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That really surprised me because usually when you think of ice, especially in nature, in my mind, it looks more like snow than like this clear, transparent kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. You wouldn't think of it being clear like that. And what it does here, the writer says, his face was fractured by its crystal facets. Now, this doesn't mean his face was broken.
No.
But actually, we're talking about the light, the reflection on his face is actually going to be like making these lines in his face because the sun's shining through this crystal clear ice.
Okay.
Yeah, that word facets is very interesting. Mm-hmm. Usually we use that word when we're describing the small sides on a diamond. So having a lot of different facets is the thing that makes a diamond sparkle. And in this case, I guess it's making ice sparkle and it's making Dave's face look fractured.
Okay. So pretty exciting. But then something else happens.
Yes. And then we heard a loud crack. Oh, my goodness. What could that be? Followed by a rumble, followed by a huge splash. The entire side of a house-sized iceberg had collapsed.
Wow.
Wow. That might be very noisy, actually.
Yeah. And I don't think about the noise. You know, you see videos of this kind of thing and there's music playing and you don't imagine how all those sounds could be pretty terrifying, I think.
Well, it's amazing the sound. If you ever see a video of it, and you can, the sound of this, this is the calving, which we talked about earlier in the day. And this is where the part breaks off, falls into the water, makes a huge splash.
Right.
Well, this is interesting, too, because usually you think of an iceberg as being a giant chunk of ice floating in the water. But they say here that it disintegrated. So it broke into all kinds of little pieces, kind of like it exploded as it fell into mm-hmm. the water. And in fact, it was in so many little pieces, it looked like a gray cloud of ice crystals. And it was a lot like smoke.
Mm, yeah, wow. I find that very fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds beautiful. But the largest chunk that fell off then rolls. And this is interesting to me, too.
Yeah, it rolls, leaving its smooth, translucent green underside sparkling in the sun. And that translucent just means that, again, it's almost clear, looking like glass that you can see through. It just has a light tint of green.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, made me think of emeralds. How about you, Naomi?
Yeah.
I was just thinking of jewels every time I was reading that line.
Yeah, it sounds really, really stunning. But then that night, they do something very fun. And this kind of I thought this was a fun moment as well in this article, Simon.
They toasted the berg, or they said a toast as they drank their drinks with the iceberg ice in them. Mm. And they said this toast for the iceberg.
And the burgers, too. They are remembering the Oxburgers from earlier in the day.
And not just the burgers, but the entire trip.
Yes, and glacier cocktails. Wow.
Oh, I'm going. How about you?
A crystalline chunk that had once fallen as snow. It's very poetic, and it must be an amazing experience. But before we wrap up for today, let's hear our feature.
Hey, Lisa. How has school been lately?
Well, my history class has been really interesting.
Oh, really? What's made your class so interesting?
I have been learning about Arctic Canada and the different villages there. There are so many cool things about it.
Oh, that must be interesting. I didn't realize that northern Canada had many villages. I thought that the land was pretty desolate.
Well, the land is very vast and cold, but some villages are thriving right now. They have schools, doctor's offices, and even the internet.
Wow, that's great you're learning about that.
Yes, it has been very educational. I would love to travel there now after learning about the area.
I would too. What would you be most excited about to see in Canada?
I think it would be amazing to see the striations and the icebergs. I have heard that the icebergs are so regal and beautiful.
Well, Lisa, I hope you get to travel there someday. It sounds like it would be a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Okay, so which of these experiences would you most enjoy, Lois?
Oh, now I'm thinking I'd like the ice crystals and seeing all the different ice and something that might remind me of jewels, Naomi. That's what I'm thinking I'd like.
I'm noticing a trend with you, Lois.
Well, yeah, and I'd like to get on that zodiac a lot.
Okay, so pretty much everything from
today.
Yeah,
yeah, everything from today.
Bill?
I would like to be on that zodiac boat and hear that. Mm. I would like to hear that the calving sound.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. And Simon?
It all sounds good to me. I'd just kind of like to visit northern Canada, I think.
Did you think that before you read this article?
Yeah, you know, for our listeners, they will remember that I am the one who has been positive about northern Canada throughout the last 3 days. There was a lot of talk about death and all kinds of terrible experiences there. But I have always been inspired by the beauty of this area of Canada.
It is an incredibly fascinating place with a lot of details, a lot of interesting facets, to use one of our words from today. If you are fascinated by the Arctic, then on page 18 we have a list of books that you can check out. Recommended reading, if you are curious to know more and if you want an extra challenge in your reading, you could try out one of these books. Have a look for them. Let us know your thoughts, as always, and thank you so much for being with us. Until next time, this is Naomi.
Lois,
Bill,
and Simon
saying goodbye.
Goodbye.